Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, August 14th, 2008. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. With this week, home brewer and coffee roaster Scott Couet joins us to teach us the basics of roasting our own coffee. If we roast our own beans, our coffee beers can have an added dimension of creative control. Well, if you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And you can follow me on Twitter, my username, basicbrewing, all one word. I have some exciting news to pass on about my buddy Steve Wilkes. Steve's the drummer for the Claudia Burson Trio, you may remember, and they'll be taping a performance for later broadcast on the Arkansas Educational Television Network. That's the PBS network here in Arkansas. If you like jazz and you like Steve, this will be a great opportunity to see him play, to see him in action. The concert will be recorded on Tuesday, September 16th at 7 p.m. in the AETN studios in Conway, Arkansas. You can find out all the details at aetn.org. Tickets are free, by the way, so it's a good chance to see Steve play. And congratulations to Steve, Claudia, and bassist Claire Starr as well. We've got good feedback from last week's show featuring Fred Johnson's experiment comparing shaking against pumping for aerating worts. Several of you asked if Fred could do the experiment again and test the effectiveness of using one of those whip thingies that you attach to your drill to stir up the wort. And I think that's a really interesting question. You know, winemakers use those things to knock the CO2 out of their wine before adding clarifying agents, and I'd be really interested to see how effective they are in actually putting oxygen into unfermented wort. I've had reports from brewers who use them and swear by them, so I'd be interested to see how they actually do scientifically. I'd like to also see what an oxygen bottle does as well. Also, some of you wrote in asking about oxidation risks to fermented beers. If just pouring wort or racking it into the fermenter, as Fred demonstrated last week, if that can introduce a fair amount of oxygen alone by itself, should we be worried about introducing oxygen to the beer after it's fermented and therefore potentially causing oxidation problems later on? That's another good question. There are brewers who fill their kegs and carboys and bottling buckets, what have you, with CO2 before racking their beer into them to ensure that they don't have to worry about oxidation later on. However, this is just my opinion, I think if you're just making a moderate gravity beer that you're going to be drinking in fairly short order, you probably shouldn't worry too much about that. But if you're brewing a big beer to lay down in your cellar for a few years, taking precautions against oxidation, I'd say that may be worth your while. So, again, that's just my opinion. I've never flooded my bottling buckets or carboys with CO2 before racking into them. So I don't know. I don't have anything to compare it against. But anyway, interesting stuff. I hope Fred has time to work on another round of those tests. I've got a couple of letters this week asking for your help. The first comes from David in Montreal, Canada. David says, I brewed a strong Scotch ale 3 months ago. I tried my first one yesterday. The beer was flat, but the taste was great. I think I should have added fresh yeast at the bottling time, but I didn't. Do you have any suggestions? In the room where my bottles are, the temperature is around 71 to 79 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's good. David says, here's some details on the beer. The original gravity was 1100. Final gravity was 1017. He said he was trying for something higher. The beer was in the bottle for 5 weeks before I tasted it yesterday. Is there any way I can save it? Well, David, it probably wouldn't have hurt to pitch some fresh yeast in there at bottling time. You've already waited 5 weeks, but one option, however, is to wait some more time. There probably is some good yeast in the beer. in all likelihood. It'll be tired and weak from doing all that fermentation, but, you know, it still may do some good over time. Other than that, I don't know. I suppose you could pop open every single bottle and add a little bit more yeast in each one, but that seems kind of tricky. So I don't know. What do you think out there? Have you been able to fix a big flat beer after it's been in the bottle? If so, drop me a line and we'll pass that information on to David and the rest of us, by the way. I had another letter from John, and I'll leave out any more details about where he's from, and you'll see why probably in a second. John was in a situation in a group tasting at a homebrew club meeting, and he tasted a brew with some fairly obvious flaws. Now, this was a tricky situation because the brewer had said that he was really proud of that beer and was anxious to share it with everybody. But neither John nor anyone else had the courage to speak up and tell the brewer that the beer apparently had some problems that could potentially be fixed the next time he brewed the recipe. Now, we've all been in a similar situation. You know, brewers give you a beer that they're really excited about, and you detect something in there that shouldn't be there. But the easiest thing to do is just to say, hey, that's great, and be done with it. However, if we taste something that's not right, I think we probably have a duty to point it out. I mean, how else is the brewer to improve? So my question to you is this. If you come into that situation, how do you handle it? How do you give constructive criticism without discouraging a fellow brewer or embarrassing them? Shoot me a note. Let me know. You can write to james@basicbrewing.com or just use the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. And please check your email address. Now, a while back, we did a show on brewing beers with coffee. Got a lot of good response from that show, and along with brewing tips that people shared on how they use coffee and beer, some of the feedback was asking for a show on how to roast coffee beans at home. So I asked Scott Kuei of San Francisco to lead us through the process. Well, Scott Kuei, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Well, hi, James.
We're going to talk about one of my favorite brewed beverages, but this time it's not going to be beer. We're going to talk about coffee.
Yeah. Well, the good part about coffee is it brews a lot faster.
Yeah.
It's much better for impatient people.
Yeah. What if we had to brew 5 gallons of coffee at a time? Wait a month.
I think I'd rather drink five gallons of beer than 5 gallons of coffee.
Yeah, it would probably be a different world.
Yeah. We all get a lot more done, and we never go to bed.
Yeah. But we'd be really anxious. One of the reasons why I want to talk about coffee is because when we did the coffee episode in talking about how to use coffee in beer, I had several requests from people saying, hey, well, just coffee itself and how to roast your own beans and how to, you know, brew your own coffee the right way, that would be an excellent topic for a show. So I like to take suggestions from the crowd. And so we struck up a conversation over email, and I found out that you are an amateur coffee roaster as well as an amateur brewer. So here we are. How did you get involved in coffee on more than just a, you know, pedestrian level in the beginning?
Well, there are a couple of big roasters in the Bay Area and a lot of little small ones. So the Bay Area sort of has pretty decent coffee, but it tends to be sort of pricey. And at one of the numerous economic downturns, somehow it came up. I tried roasting coffee. Ooh. Like many, 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 many years ago when I was young and handsome. And my sister got me a popcorn popper, which a lot of home coffee roasting devices are essentially souped up air popcorn poppers.
Really?
Yeah. Because one of the things is you have to get the beans really hot. They're close to 500 degrees when they're doing their thing. And to avoid scorching them, you have to keep them moving and get really even heat. So if you, the air naturally does that. It blows over it and it makes them bounce around, and so you can get a very even roast if you're using an air popper. So anyway, I tried it, and I went down to the local big coffee place and talked them into giving me some green beans, and I roasted them, and they smelled horrible. And I tried it a few times, and I brewed it up, but it was rather nasty, and so it went on the shelf, and I popped popcorn instead.
Now, does that ruin the popcorn popper after you've tried to roast coffee beans in it?
It's fine. if you roast, there's a few, you have to go on the sites and find out which ones, because a lot of the modern ones don't have enough wattage, and they have like thermal sensors that you have to disable because they'll turn the temperature off too low. And if you go too low, you sort of end up baking the coffee instead of roasting it, and it doesn't work so well. One of the problem with the air roasters is they tend to roast really fast.
Mm-hmm.
So the folks who like the sort of big bodied, slow kind of coffee you can get with a big commercial roaster, you need like a drum roaster.
Mm.
And the air roasters tend to go too fast for that. There's lots of ways to fool. I mean, coffee has got more people with more geeked out systems than beer. There are folks who've got computer controlled thermostat things. I mean, you know, they'll start off with your air popcorn popper, and then it's got wires coming out all over it with computer programs controlling the temperature and the fan and the this and the that. I mean, they get crazy about this stuff. I am a very laid back coffee roaster. I got the little air roaster. It roasts about an eighth of a pound. And I pop it in, turn it on, and roast up a batch. Takes about 6 minutes.
Hmm. Coincidentally, I have here in my little studio the Wherever popcorn pumper that I got back in 1983 when I went off to college.
You know, that may be the I think that's the model that's the big hot. People go to like garage sales and stuff because it's the older models.
Oh yeah, this sucker gets hot. I mean, it's nothing but a big lot. It's just heat. It's just heating elements with a fan in it.
That's the roaster I use is called the Fresh Roast, and that site I mentioned, sweetmarias.com, is there's other ones around. I'm not sure what the good ones are necessarily, except Sweet Maria's is they're a high-end importer. Well, high-end is not it. He's a coffee taster. He actually goes to these tasting competitions, and he's judges things, and they import small batches of coffee that he likes. So what they have depends on what he's tasted and what he's like, and they don't buy the huge batches, and a lot of times they're from farms they actually have visited. If it's in like South and Central America, they may well have been to the place where they're growing it. But they have a lot of stuff where they have tasting notes on coffee, so you can look at specific varieties that they have or other people might have, and tasting notes on that batch from that year and whatever.
So what kind of varieties? I assume that you first start off when you're looking for the beans. You first start off at looking at the different varieties of the beans and where they come from in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Does it really make a difference? I mean, can a layman who's used to drinking, you know, Folgers from the carafe at work, can we who don't know much about coffee, can we tell very readily the difference between these coffees grown in different regions of the world?
Yes. Folks who are used to American roast tends to be pretty light, like Folgers is a pretty light roast coffee as opposed to – see, I'm not sure what's back there. There's a company called Pete's, which is big in California. It came out of, I think, Berkeley or Oakland, and they're sort of like a micro Starbucks. There's a lot of Pete's. And they tend to roast really dark. Starbucks tends to roast really, really dark. Among the coffee snobs, it's referred to as Charbucks. And the thing with the roast, the folks who are into roasting coffee will tend to, a lot of folks come from the heavy roast stuff, and the folks who are very into roasting coffee tend to go for much, much lighter roasts. And the difference is that when you're in the really dark, black, greasy bean kind of roast, the flavor profile has a lot more to do with the roast than it does with wherever the beans came from. Because now you're dealing with a lot of carbon and char and that kind of stuff. When you get lighter, and some of these folks roast really, really light, like, you know, light tan color on the beans, it becomes much more about where it was grown. I grew up in the dark, dark roast, and that was what I started off trying to do. And Sweet Maria's makes a blend that'll hold up to that with the idea of doing that. So it's a blended green beans, and they're sort of designed to roast really dark. But most beans don't. It's sort of silly to spend much money on beans and then roast them that dark. So a sort of medium kind of, mahogany kind of color is generally where I'm at, which is, I think, officially called something a City Plus. And especially if you're lighting roaster, you can roasting lighter, you can taste the difference from different areas. South America tends to be lighter. Mexico is a sort of light. They call them acidic. And I mean, if you look at the tasting notes on these things, it looks like a wine tasting notes. You know, citrus flavors with blueberry and blah, blah, blah.
So it sounds like to me, as far as using the coffee in a brew, a beer, it seems like to me that you owe it to yourself to kind of look at, especially if you're going to roast your own, look at these tasting notes and choose. It would be fun to choose a coffee that would pair well with different styles of beer. I mean, people tend to talk about, you know, coffee porters or coffee stouts or, you know, the darker. But it seems like to me that it would be interesting to pair a different tasting coffee with a different style of beer.
You know, I hadn't really thought of it that way, but you're right.
I had the chance to watch a local coffee roaster work, you know, it was large to me, a large coffee roaster in the back of this little coffee shop. And there's a technical part of it, but there's also an art component as well, because you do have to run the roaster at a certain temperature, and you put the beans in at a certain temperature. You have to watch your temperature to make sure it doesn't get too high. And then, you know, she talked about the crack. You know, there's this first crack, and then when you hear the second crack, it's about time to, you know, to check the beans. And she was checking color the whole time. And so it looks like, you know, it's not just like press a button and, you know, 6 minutes later you automatically get the coffee that you want. Is there a certain amount of babysitting, or take us through the process? You get your beans, and you know, talk about your process and the machine that you actually use.
You take your green beans, which are for ones you're going to roast, and the fresh roast comes with little scoopers, or at least it does some Sweet Maria, but I think it's like a 43-gram scooper. You're doing it by size, but it comes out to be about an eighth of a pound of green beans. So it's like two scoops. You put them in the fresh roast. You put the top on, which looks a little like a mortar board. It's sort of big round or some kind of alien hat. Anyway, you put that on, which catches the chaff that I think we talked about. As the beans heat up, they blow off their skins, and you have this papery, thin skin stuff that will go all over the place if you just do it without a catcher on top. And you turn it on, and it works pretty much like a hot air popper. It pumps really hot air up through this little chamber, and since beans like it hotter than popcorn, the chamber on the fresh roast is glass, actually probably Pyrex. So when it's new, you can actually see them bouncing around and popping. And as you roast more, it gets darker and darker on the glass. And you can work hard with alcohol or something and try and melt that off. But traditionally, that's sort of the seasoning on commercial coffee roasters. You don't really want to lose that patina that gets in there. After a year or two, well, because it's sort of like seasoning a frying pan. After a year or two, it gets a little hard to look through the glass. A lot of people clean them at that point so they can see it again because they like watching the beans pop. But your timing on how you're roasting has mostly to do with listening to the beans and smelling. So it doesn't really matter that you can't see them. And commercial roasters, you can't see them unless you scoop some out. So you turn on the timer. It has a little sort of like a kitchen timer thing, and it turns it on, and it goes along, and maybe 4 or 5 minutes in, you'll start getting the first crack. And up to that point, it has a sort of grassy kind of smell, warm, but it doesn't have the toasty smell that people associate with coffee. And as you hit about 4 or 5 minutes, it's starting to smell a little bit more like coffee, and it's a little more into that toasty things, and it'll start popping. It'll start sounding a little like popcorn. The kernels puff up. They don't puff up the same way that popcorn. They don't explode into little flowers, but the beans themselves get almost twice as large. And they're popping internally from all that stress of that, and you start hearing this pop, pop. And it's pretty loud and pretty sharp and quite easy to hear. And they'll do that for a while. It depends on the roaster and how hot it is and what kind of beans they are and stuff. But, you know, maybe 30 seconds to a minute or so. And then it'll get quiet again. And then in another minute, 2 minutes, I'm going to the fresh roast, which is about a 6 to 8 minute total roast cycle. If you're on a big drum roaster, it's just stretch that out. It runs about 20 minutes, so everything's a little longer. But you have the gap, and then you have what they call the second crack, which is it's more like the crackling, fire crackling. You know, it's little tiny ticks, and you'll hear a couple, and if you let it go, they'll start just taking off. It gets thick with lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of little crackles. The minute it starts that second crack, you can take the beans into the cool cycle. On the fresh roast, you just turn it to the last 2 minutes or the cool. It's got a little marker on there, and you can tell the whole sound changes a little bit because the heater's turned off, and you just get blowing air through the thing, which takes a while to cool down because the beans, as I may have mentioned, get up to about 500 degrees when they're at the second crack. Now, when you stop depends on what kind of coffee you're trying to, what kind of roast you're trying to end up with. At the second crack or just before the second crack, I mean, how you tell, I don't know. But if you have a lot of if you have a lot of thermal controls, I think we talked about people get crazy with computers and thermostats and all kinds of thermometers all over the place, and they chart it all out and try and control everything. If you're really following the temperature for a given group of beans, the second crack will happen at about the same temperature. So you can catch it beforehand if you're like monitoring everything. But my setup is not like NASA, so I don't do that. So at the first crack, at the second crack, you have basically the lightest roast that you'd normally be able to buy commercially. So it's more like a American, you know, light tan to chestnutty kind of color. As it roasts along and the second crack gets really busy, it will move into a more mahogany kind of color. And then from mahogany, it's sort of dark mahogany. And if you pulled the beans out, you'd see there's little spots of sort of oil on them. Then it'll go still that kind of brown, a little darker, and be sort of have an oily sheen over the whole thing. And if you keep on going, they'll turn black and be real shiny, which is what people think of as like Italian roast. If you buy whole, being Italian roasts are usually black and oily, and if you get them cold, they stick together. And that's at that point, the bean is pretty much thoroughly charred, and the flavor you're going to end up with has more to do with the heavy roast than it has to do with where the beans came from.
So you're losing the nuance of the regionality at that point, if you take it to that extreme.
Yeah, you. I mean, it's not true that they all taste the same, but they taste a lot more. Beans from anywhere taste a lot closer to the same once you've hit the dark roast stage.
So if you want to get into coffee roasting, and you don't want to invest in even say an $80 roaster. Are there low-tech ways, like my antique popcorn pumper, that you can get into just trying a very small batch of roasting?
Yeah, there's actually a number. One is your popcorn roaster, which a lot of people use. The certain models, and I'm not sure which ones, but they're not ones currently sold, tend to put out a lot of heat, I think, before the government made them safety conscious and said you can't.
After dorm rooms were set on fire and such as that.
well, ones now have a whole bunch of thermo fuses. So if it gets too hot, it just the little fuse blows in the heating element and they won't start up again. So people use those, take them apart, and bypass all the safety devices. Because popcorn pops at a lower temperature, and some of the early air popcorn poppers just had, go for it. But the problem is if things get stuck in there or with coffee beans, they won't pop out of the popper. You can start a fire because you're way above the, what paper burns at 350 degrees or something like that, and you're running around 500. Your pizza oven temperature's in there.
I think it's Fahrenheit 451, I think, is the
temperature. Oh, okay. You're right. 350 is a little low, isn't it? Anyway, math challenge and science challenge, what can I say?
It's my science fiction background that...
I was thinking I just had the numbers transposed because... Anyway,
so if you can't find a wherever popcorn pumper on eBay or in your closet somewhere, what other things are there?
Well, the first thing a lot of other folks are using are other popcorn poppers, like the stovetop whirly ones. It's got like a clear lid and a crank, and it stirs the beans around. You can do that. That works fine. You're on the stovetop, so it's going to produce – coffee produces a fair amount of smoke when it's roasting. And the more beans you roast and the darker you roast, the more smoke you get. So if you're looking to roast a pound to a really dark roast, you're producing a lot of smoke. So if you're going to do it on the stovetop, you really want to have a good exhaust fan or your house is going to look like a fire zone. You can do it on a barbecue outside. People do that. That works fine. Your neighbors will all come over for coffee afterwards. You get that burnt toast smell at the end of the roast that everyone goes, oh, coffee. So that works fine. Those are really cheap, and you can often pick them up used. Another stovetop method is a wok. You get a wok and one of those bamboo spatulas, and you just stir them. That works fine. And then the weirdest and maybe most fun is to go get a big dog bowl, stainless steel dog bowl, and a heat gun. And you, again, take that heat-proof spatula, and you just play the heat gun on the beans in the coffee and in the dog food bowl and stir them with spatula so they stay nice and even and, go on the back porch. Because with that kind of method, you're blowing air on it. So, again, the chaff's going to blow all over the place. So you want to be outside. With the stovetop and the other ones, the chaff will probably just burn up inside, which is not a big deal. or it'll be sitting on top of the beans, and also not a big deal. So that's about as low tech. There's also a bunch of folks who are, which is a more expensive route, but if you're going to roast a lot of beans, it's cool. They have adapted rotisserie things. So you can stick them in your barbecue, and you've got a big drum in there, and you can put in like 5 pounds and turn it on and pretend like you're barbecuing, but you're actually roasting coffee. That works pretty well. I mean, people really like it. I don't roast that much, so it's sort of a waste. And there are actually dedicated, converted, like Foreman grill with a rotisserie thing that'll go. I mean, people have done endless stuff. And if you want to go totally antique and old-fashioned, there's these things that look sort of like it's like a stand with a cast iron bowling ball with a little door in it, and it's the old school top of the stove roaster. So it you have a crank and it rotates this globe out of that's the ones I've seen are cast iron, and it's the thing that sits on the burner itself holds it up like a sticks on a spit kind of thing. So you're rotating this ball, which is you put coffee beans in, and you can't see anything, and I'm not sure how much you can hear, but the quality of coffee they were roasting was probably so bad it didn't make that much difference. So I think they're cute, but I don't own one.
So can you use the coffee right after you roast it?
Yeah, the recommendation is to let it rest for somewhere between 2 to 4 days. But I don't. I have. There's a slight difference. I think if you were making espresso, there would be a much more noticeable difference. A lot of people who roast are very into espresso. And espresso is such a concentrated extract of the coffee that little things can make a big difference. Mm. So right after it's roasted, there's a lot of CO2 trapped in the beans. And CO2 has a sour flavor. So really fresh roasted and brewed coffee will tend to have more of the tart flavors. I mean, it's not sour, but it's – they call it bright. Mm. Sort of like in wine. It's bright. So it'll mellow out over the 4 days, and it'll if you seal it up in a plastic bag with squeeze all the air out and you let those beans sit for like 4 days, the bag will be puffy because of all the CO2 that the beans are off-gassing.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, it's a slight difference for regular brewed coffee, at least in my experience. Maybe I'm not using beans that are quite so. Central America and South America, beans tend to be brighter in the first place, a lighter roast and more acidic. Acidic in a good way, not acidic in a sort of like lemony kind of way, rather than people talk about coffee and acid, and they're talking about it sort of battery acid kind of, swallow it and you feel it burn all the way down.
That's the coffee that's been on the burner for 2 days.
Yeah, that's that stuff that you thought they brewed this morning, but actually it had gone dry the night before, and someone poured water in the bowl to like rinse it, and you thought it was fresh coffee. Yeah.
I think I've done that.
Yeah, I've done that too. It's an experience.
So I've got a coffee grinder, but I've got one of those handheld things that's got the propeller in it, the little whirly gig in the top. I take it that's
what they're called, whirly blade.
The whirly blade. Well, I take it that that's probably not the best method.
Yeah. I had one of those, then I had a cheap grinder, then I had a sort of low-end commercial grinder that I found on eBay. Folks who are into espresso, especially, are very into their grinders, and they drop some extremely serious change on these big grinders that could grind, 20 pounds a day without breaking a sweat, and they're grinding 16 grams at a shot for an espresso thing. They'll last forever. For an espresso, it's very important because the difference between the different kind of grinders and even the cheap burr grinders is the burrs will tend to sort of wobble because they're inexpensive and they're plastic and they're put in there and they're trying to make drip coffee thing, and that's easy. But in espresso, you've got a basket with little teeny holes, and it's very easy to clog those holes. And if you clog them, it's not good for your espresso. Also, the coffee extracts at a certain pace. You know, the flavor comes out of it. And once you get past taking out the flavors that you want, you start getting a lot of bitterness, sort of like boiling your grain in the wort. You know, you start getting stuff you didn't want. So the ideal grind for a coffee lets you get all the flavor you want out and stop before you start extracting all that it probably is tannin, actually. but you get this nasty kind of flavor. And if you've gone to truck stop coffee, you've tasted that flavor. So with a Whirly Blade grinder, some of the stuff is dust and some of it is much larger. And when you're brewing, the really dusty stuff will extract almost instantly. And then for the rest of the time the water is going through, it's just adding nasty bitterness. Where the larger ones might not even get all their flavor out because the water hasn't had a chance to get into them enough. So the advantage with a decently quality grinder, you know, I think KitchenAid even makes some in the under $100 range that are pretty respected, is that the consistency of the grind will be much higher, and the extraction will be. So you won't get the bitter extra flavors. For home drip kind of coffee or certainly for percolator, but for any kind of normal coffee making, it's probably not a big deal one way or the other. If you're doing espresso, it's almost impossible to get a consistent shot. That's what they call it. Pull a shot with a Whirly Blade because the grind is never the same any two times you do it. So what worked yesterday won't work today. And if you went a second too long and there's too much dust in there, it's going to plug all the little holes and it just won't go. the trick in the espresso thing is you want to have all the fluid pass through the coffee, and I think it's 24, 25 seconds. If it's longer than that, it starts getting really, really bitter. So if it's the wrong grind, if you got the thing plugged up, then you're going to have your, you know, espresso shot being about a thimbleful. Because if you let it just keep on forcing water through there, you're not going to be able to drink it anyway.
And I'm assuming that the next dimension is the coffee maker itself. I mean, you know, my coffee maker here in the little studio is a Black & Decker brew and go thing. You know, where I do one cup at a time, and you know, I get my caffeine delivery that way.
caffeine delivery system.
Exactly. But I'm assuming that a whole nother dimension is the array of coffee makers that are out there as well.
Actually, that's very true. I have something called AeroPress for traveling. I was doing a gig at a corporate place for a number of months, and after tasting the coffee that was available, which was surprising because they actually had a roaster in-house. This is a large... Well, I don't know if I can say it. It's Apple Computer.
I was going to say Apple or Google.
they have a big commercial coffee roaster in their cafeteria area, and they have a guy who does roast, but yuck. I'm sorry, it wasn't that good. I was very surprised. I thought, oh, this is going to be heaven. And I was like, oh, no. So the AeroPress looks like a sort of big syringe without a needle, and it takes these little disc paper filters, and you put coffee and you stick the hot water in there and you press it on through, and it makes a pretty extracted cup of coffee. It's the big advantage is it's really easy to clean up and it doesn't take much space. I usually use these gold filter one cup coffee makers. I'm not sure who makes them, but they're it's a little plastic thing that you put the water in, and it's got a gold filter on the bottom, and they're just one cup things, and they're designed to sit over the top of a cup, and you pour water on the top and it goes through. That's because my wife doesn't drink coffee much, so on the odd times we'll make two cups that way, and I usually pour them into espresso cups. I mean, I keep it in a thermal mug, and then I just drink a little at a time. But that's sort of the equivalent of the paper filter, which is a very good and fine way to make coffee. There's also vacuum coffee makers. I don't have one of those. They're very cool, though. They were very popular, I think, in the 50s and stuff. They look like figure eights, and they're usually glass. In fact, I think they're always glass. And you have a burner down below, and you've got water in the bottom part and coffee sitting in the upper part, coffee grounds and a bunch of air. And the heat down below heats up the water, and it forces it up through, I think, this siphony thing. Anyway, the water ends up in the top with pretty much no water in the bottom, and you turn the heat off. And then as the bottom cools, it creates a vacuum, and it sucks the fluid back through a filter into the bottom. So it looks very Mr. Science-y, and it's supposed to be really cool on the table to do it, because the whole thing is you do the whole brew on the table, and so it's going on very conversational. And most of them have elaborate kind of arm things that are holding this whole contraption up, and it looks very cool. That's supposed to be really good tasting coffee, but I've never made it. And the other one that's really common is a French press, which you probably have seen. It's like a straight-sided pitcher, and it's got a screen kind of thing and a plunger, and you put the coffee and the water in the bottom, and you put the lid on and let it sit for a few minutes, and then you press on down. And
I've actually made a little mash in one of those.
Yeah, yeah. And it pushes the beans, the grinds to the bottom, and then you pour off the top.
Mm-hmm.
So those make a really thick cup of coffee, because that filtering on there it's much coarser than like a paper filter. So there tends to be a lot of sludge in the bottom of the cup when you're finished drinking coffee. But it is a thicker cup. Some mornings you might want to have that French press.
Now, are there any hints or tips that you can give to first-time coffee roasters that, any mistakes that you made going into it that are rookie mistakes that a lot of people make?
Don't use the microwave. That's when I was trying to make my old popcorn popper work, it tends not to get hot enough, which is the problem with a lot of popcorn poppers is they don't get hot enough. So you'll end up baking the coffee, or it'll just get stuck, sort of like a stuck sparge. It'll get to a certain darkness, and it'll never get to the second crack. And you can sit there all night long, and it just doesn't put in enough heat to actually get the beans to get to the second crack. And you don't want that. Any roast that takes more than maybe half an hour they start calling it baking the coffee instead of roasting it. And you lose all kinds of the volatile oils that you're trying to keep. So I had one, and it was like 18 minutes, and the stuff was not going to happen. And it was cold, and I was doing it outside because smoke and et cetera. And I thought, I can just pop it in the microwave for 30 seconds, and it'll just finish it up. And in about 15 seconds, I had a bowl full of ash. It was
it finished it up all right.
It finished it up. And, you know, in a couple of days, the kitchen stopped smelling like burnt toast. yeah. So that's sort of like boiling over your wort in the kitchen. It's really good for your significant other. So don't do that. Don't walk away while you're roasting on any surface. It's very easy for the things to get extremely burnt, which is bad because it'll smoke up and stink up your house. But also, you've got a fire hazard. I mean, you're right in the zone where things actually can combust when you're at the end of the roast. So you need to pay attention. But, you know, with the air roasters, you're talking generally about 7 or 8 minutes. So if you can't pay attention for 7 or 8 minutes, you should probably have a homebrew while you're while you're roasting.
Of course, the reason that I'm making the coffee is I can't pay attention for 6 or 7 minutes.
So. Oh, yeah. So maybe the homebrew isn't the thing. Maybe you need to use the coffee from the day before and brew some before you start roasting. That may be the solution. The other thing is if you start breathing, you know, as it's roasting away, part of what's roasting off is caffeine. You're lowering your caffeine when you roast. So, you know, if you just sit in there and inhale deeply while you're roasting, you'll get a little buzz.
Well, this is exciting stuff. And I what I want to do, I mean, you know, I'm going crazy. I'm trying to grow barley and I'm growing my own hops and, you know, so I want to kind of build my beers from the ground up. So I hope the next espresso porter or the next coffee porter that I make will be made with my own beans that I've roasted. So this is exciting stuff.
Yeah, sounds good.
Well, thanks again to Scott. Scott's one of my heroes this week because I kind of had a recording disaster and lost part of our interview as I was editing today. And Scott was gracious enough to re-record part of his interview this morning. So this episode is on time because of Scott Kuei. So thank you. Thank you, Scott. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to putting my popcorn popper, my antique popcorn popper, to a good use. And then using that coffee to brew up another delicious coffee beer. Apparently it's not that hard. If you have brewing questions about coffee or beer or otherwise, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can check out our low-tech lagering and decoction mashing DVD on basicbrewingshop.com. You can see Steve Wilkes do a single-step decoction mash, and you can follow me through a lager fermentation in the middle of summer where I don't use a dedicated chest freezer. There are also our original DVDs and Basic Brewing Introduction to Extract Home Brewing. We walk you through the extract brewing process step by step from boiling to bottling. And in Basic Brewing Stepping into All Grain, we take you through the all grain process from milling your grain to collecting your wort. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks. And you can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com, including our new shop in Singapore. It's iBrew for those of you in that part of the world. You know, shipping from Arkansas to, say, Australia, New Zealand, pretty pricey. But you can go to our website and click on the link on the Where to Buy section there. Go to basicbrewing.com, go to Where to Buy, and you can see a link to iBrew Singapore. And give them a try. Throw some support their way. Anyway, if you don't know if there's a vendor in your area, check out that list. And if there's not a vendor in your area, you can order it in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. We've got different shirts now, different colors, including our Go Forth and Flocculate shirt in white. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are KitchenAid KP26M 1XPM Professional 600 Series 6-Quart Stand Mixer Pearl Metallic, and How to Draw Pokemon. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logos on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We appreciate your support. Been staying up late watching the Olympics. Also, we got an Apple Store button on there, too, if you're going to buy a big old computer or a lot of big computers through the Apple Store. Click on that first. We'll get a little hunk of that. And we appreciate it. Thanks, everybody. That's it until next week. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by our buddy Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.